Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
720 WGN, John Landecker, and little did I know that the first album I ever purchased as a kid would fit right in right now. Daniel Beverly and Rick Wojcik are behind the documentary Dusty Groove, The Sound of Transition, and they join us now. Danielle, Rick, good evening. Welcome to WGN.
Hi.
Hi. Did you hear that what I say? Did you hear that?
Oh, yeah.
That's the original album. That was the first album I ever purchased.
One of the first important electric piano records, too.
Here we go. That's right. This is a great documentary you have put together. Dusty Groove, The Sound of Transition, a virtual screening tomorrow as part of the Chicago Underground Film Festival. And you can purchase your virtual ticket at cuff.eventive.org. For what sets itself up as a documentary about a record store, and it certainly is about recordings, there are so many other levels to your documentary that are touching, funny, amazing. I just can't tell you how much I liked it on so many different levels. So why don't we just start at the beginning? There's this record store, right? It's called the Dusty Groove, correct? Anybody?
Right. Yes.
And eventually you, Rick, purchased the rights to the name Dusty Groove?
No, we were actually the first people to ever coin that phrase, and it's a little bit more complicated, but we were a store when we opened up. We sold a lot of jazz music and soul music, and we didn't want to kind of be jazz this or soul music that, so we came up with groove, which is kind of more wide-encompassing. And then in Chicago, the term dusty, especially back in the 90s when we started, was a way to refer to old soul records, like Dusty Radio.
Yeah.
So we became Dusty Groove because we sold old records and because old records often have a dusty groove.
Yeah, they do. That, when you took over this business, it became complete. It became something else. I mean,
Well, the business was actually, I mean, I conceived the business in with John Schauer, who started it, who's also in film. And it was kind of imagined on a website, and it was back in the mid-90s, and there wasn't a lot of online selling, and we knew there was a global market for the kind of music that we loved, especially the kind of music that Chicago did really well. And we went online in early 1996, and business kind of took off immediately. We were just deluged with orders from Tokyo, London, all over the world. In fact, we probably did better with overseas customers the first year or two than we did with American customers.
Following you around to examine folks' record collection is really quite something else, which I'm going to get into in just a couple of minutes. Danielle, what was the what made you decide to do a documentary about this?
Rick, because he's like an encyclopedia, which he already proved in the first, you know, 30 seconds of this program. He knows so much about music. He loves it. He lives it. As you see, he, like, you know, is in basements, he's in storage spaces, he's in high-end houses. He never gets tired of it. And I also had heard all these stories from him over the years about all of these folks who would be selling their really prized, their once prized possessions, their collections of records that really defined who they are, just as you had said, you know, you like immediately put on the record, your first record, you remember it, it's part of your identity. And he walks into people's homes, their personal spaces, and he walks in by himself. And so he has these very intimate, moving, and as you said, sometimes funny interactions with people who are you know, they might be dying, they might be divorcing, they might be kind of blossoming to a new person, and they're selling their records to him. He's the only person that could know those stories. And I said, can I come with you? And then we started.
Well, I've never seen anything like it, and we'll talk more about it when we come back on 720 WGN. Well, don't you know, genius plus soul equals jazz. 720 WGN, John Landecker with Daniel Beverly and Rick Wojcik, who are behind the really fascinating documentary, Dusty Groove, The Sound of Transition. What was the decision to predominantly focus in on jazz, hip-hop, and R&B?
You mean it's a story?
Well, that's
or
a lot
a
of what Rick, yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Well, with the store, I mean, when we started, it was the height of the kind of indie rock grunge moment, you know, the Q101 generation and things like that. And, you know, we were just more devoted to the kind of music we loved in Chicago. And, you know, hip hop, oddly, was, you know, was a new music, new-ish back then. But it also, you know, its building blocks were older jazz and soul music. I was doing radio on the South Side. And I had a show that actually played old soul and jazz records that were being used by hip hoppers or sometimes would end up being used because we had a lot of DJs that listened to the station. And my partner when we started the business was a guy named John Chower, a.k.a. J.P. Chill, who had the first all hip hop radio show in Chicago. He's, you know, still with us. He's our genius computer programmer. We couldn't do it without him. He keeps us alive. We've all kind of changed our lives since those days, but it really grew out of radio. I mean, we just loved music. We were at WHBK on the South Side and just tried to find a way to be grown-ups and still be connected to the music.
I know the feeling. This is predominantly about, well, I see it more. Well, wait a minute. Hold on a second. First of all, I have to tell you, I had a friend of mine pass away a few months ago, and I knew he was a collector or hoarder, depending on your viewpoint. And his family asked Mike Dempsey, my friend and I, to check out his collection. And they took us to a storage locker. And there, your movie opens with you in front of a storage locker. Yeah. And tell us what that situation was, because I just sat there with like, oh my gosh, I know exactly what this is.
I have that also all the time, and that was a Chicago jazz DJ who had passed away, and that was his widow, and you know the records have been in storage for about 10 years, and you know she was finally selling them off. I mean, part of this situation is often everybody's got a different schedule. Everybody, you know, some people try to get rid of their stuff before they, you know, are empty nesters. Some people leave everything behind them and the family has to deal with them. Some people sell in little bits because it satisfies their interest more to just sort of let them out like little birds and little, you know, each one out of the nest. You know, and in that scenario, it was just the records have been in storage for 10 years and it was a jazz collection that was full of a lot of great stuff. And, you know, it's a great way to open the movie.
Yeah.
And it's pretty much a typical day in my life. So.
Yes. As we find out during the course of the film, how long did it take you to just shoot all of the footage originally?
Well, you know, what's great about this film is it's unlike my other films, which tend to sort of like start one place and follow a situation over several years till its eventual end. This was, you know, this is Rick's life every single day. So I could just drop in when I was able to. I had started a job at Marquette University being a professor. And so, you know, I would drive down to Chicago. And so we did filming over several years.
Wow.
But also following a couple of stories from beginning to end in the film.
Which is what really, in my mind anyway, elevates the documentary into something way more than just music per se, but what it means to families, children, legacies, people who just collect. I can't even imagine the amount of vinyl that you see on a day-to-day basis. You know, you hear, oh, the record stores, you know, they're not going to be around because, you know, vinyl maybe is making a little comeback. This is a whole different thing as far as I was concerned. This was like, pardon me expression, but like you were like the Amazon prime of record collecting. I mean,
I think I'm more like the old rag picker.
I don't think the old rag picker had like computerized data and employees packing up international orders on a just stacking them up and sending them out. I was impressed, man. I mean, you've really put together some high tech, very, I could only imagine, very successful business.
Yeah. Well, yeah. In a world where, you know, the CD business was riding high when we opened our doors and we were a vinyl only business at the start. Now we're the reverse. We sell an awful lot of CDs as well. We just care about the music. But, you know, it's been a dying industry for 20 years. And, you know, you really have to remain dynamic. If you love what you do, you have to keep figuring out a way to do it. And, you know, just being nimble like this has been very important to us.
Well, I felt one of the common denominators of everyone that you went to see was the size of the record collection. They were all, in my opinion anyway, gigantic, hundreds, thousands even. But where they were, who they came from, and what they meant to someone, that was different every time. I mean, you had the story of the I guess he was a sax player.
Grady Johnson.
Yeah, and his daughter and his collection. And then there's this guy who claims that he can't get a job doing playing the piano anymore, but it looks like he's got $1 million turntable, and he said and he says his record collection is worth $500,000.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, that's amazing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the things when you experience these stories is, you know, you're never getting the full story. You know, you're always reading between the lines, but there's even lines you can't find. And so, yeah, there's more mysteries at the end of the day than truths sometimes, but that's what makes it so fascinating.
Yeah, really. And, you know, lots of folks who have purchased albums over the years, certainly not to the extent that we see in this documentary, but there's always something that comes up every once in a while. Gee, I wonder what that's worth. You know, I mean, do I have an album that's worth some money? I don't know. But your approach is, they're worth money. And you look like you're going to go anywhere to check out these very large collections, including Japan. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's really quite astounding to see vinyl and CDs of any kind, whether it's rock, jazz, whatever, pop, to be at the center of this amazing business of preserving these collections from people who want to sell them for whatever reason. And then I'm guessing that on your website or something like that, you list what's for sale. People all over the world check it out and buy from you, and you ship it. I mean,
hundreds of records every day.
Isn't like some sort of CD thing. These are vinyl albums. It is amazing the amount of interest and the amount of business that it generates. And I mean, I used to have a disc washer. You know what that is?
Yeah.
Well, that's nothing. That's nothing compared to what you got. I mean, holy cow. Talk about not refurbishing, but making sure that the album that you have is pristine in just about any possible way with the equipment that you have to remove dust.
It's true. I mean, the Smithsonian uses those machines, and they do an amazing job. It's kind of archival quality. You know, because these records have been through a lot sometimes by the time they get to us. So we have some machines to dewarp them. We have a few record cleaners. It's a very painstaking process as we go through them before we even put them out, because We need to look for all the flaws, make adjustments, things like that.
How much deterioration is acceptable for you to take a
Well, it depends on the record, too. You know, there's some things you'll never see. You know, it's like if somebody threw a tomato at the Mona Lisa, you know, you'd still want to buy the Mona Lisa. But if you know, somebody threw a tomato at, you know, a cover of the Tribune, you'd say, well, that's yesterday's garbage.
I'll just get a new paper.
So,
see why I wanted to make a movie about Rick.
You know, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Your knowledge of... I mean, you just got to see this. He goes into these houses. These people have, like, just rack after rack after rack after rack of vinyl. And Rick's just like, okay, okay, okay. I mean, there's never a pause. You seem to know every single record that these people have.
Learn on the way. I mean, I just love the music and you know, just being part of it. I mean, you know, the interesting side note is, about 10 years ago, we bought the WGN library.
Did you really?
Just an amazing, right out of the Tribune building. And that was an amazing experience of just going through tens of thousands of records and, you know, seeing this radio station shaped for, you know, 30 years worth of vinyl, you know, and it was just pretty fascinating. Yeah.
How was the condition? Did WGN keep its record collection?
Some were terrible, some were perfect. But it was, you know, it was an amazing story of WGN, especially for a station that was not known for its music. So this was stuff it received and curated and was maybe used alongside the DJs talking. You know, very different than, you know, say WLS with Boogie Check, you know, where you remember some of those songs from, you know, back in the day. But even WGN had a story like that, so...
Well, this is what I. That's exactly what I take away from the documentary, is that there's so many stories, emotions, history attached to each of these people and their collection, that the decision to sell has to be a pretty. I would think it's a little difficult to come to that conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
I mean, sometimes it's part of the grieving process. Sometimes it's part of a household splitting up. Sometimes somebody's just done. You
know? Yeah.
But
so what's the most...
And Rick is like experiencing all of this almost like a therapist and a businessman at the same time. Yeah. It was wonderful to witness.
Yeah, it's really quite something. And I want to say once again, it's called Dusty Groove, The Sound of Transition, a virtual screening tomorrow as part of Chicago's Underground Film Festival. Tickets are purchased for a virtual ticket at cuff.eventive.org. And you know what? If you're interested in music and vinyl, you really ought to see this, because it's a look into a world that is quite fascinating, all populated by, you know, albums and CDs and music, but so many personal stories that go along with it. Did you ever buy that $500,000 collection from that guy?
No, there's a lot of backstory
I'll bet.
That one kind of went to the winds, but sometimes you just have to say, well, maybe this one's not for us.
Well, I've heard of people spending $100,000 on a record collection.
We certainly have, but you know,
really,
sometimes you just can't make. You know, it's a relationship, and in that case, I think Danielle does a very good job of capturing some of the more fragmented nature of that relationship compared to some of our others with the people we were dealing with.
You know, and I've heard of people. You know, you had that storage unit. I've heard I've heard from some friends of mine around the country that they know people who have actually rented a house, an extra house, so they can house their record collection.
Oh yeah,
which is really quite amazing, and shows you the link that has been established between these people and their music. Really, something else. Well, thank you all, for Danielle and Rick, for being with us.
Thank you. This was great.
Really had a great time watching this documentary. And if you can, I totally recommend getting your tickets and watching the virtual screening tomorrow. Dusty Groove, The Sound of Transitions. Thanks for being with us. All the best.
Thank you, John.
You betcha.